Hello and welcome to the LSTM podcast series, where we meet some of the most curious minds in science. Today, we meet with Dr. Peter McPherson, who will be talking about his research on TB and HIV, including recent results from an RCT where he explored the concept of HIV self-testing and care in the home environment. Then we hear from Professor Bertie Squire, who discusses applied public health research and the inception of CARD here at the school. First up, we hear from Kayla Barnes and Dr. Peter McPherson.
Today I'm speaking with Dr. Peter McPherson, a public health physician and lecturer in clinical public health at LSTM and the University of Liverpool. Peter researches the epidemiology of HIV and tuberculosis, and his main focus is on increasing access to testing and treatment in resource-limited settings. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Peter, you recently published a paper about home initiation of HIV self-testing in Malawi, in JAMA, where you explored the importance of HIV self-testing in home-based treatment. Before we speak about this study, can you give us a little background about the standard HIV diagnostic and care that we currently see today?
Thanks. So today, about 35 million people are living with HIV worldwide. We know that starting antiretroviral therapy for HIV dramatically improves your health, but also reduces your risk of infecting other people. However, the first step to getting treatment is taking a test. In sub-Saharan Africa, where most of the people in the world with HIV live, only about 1 in 5 adults tested for HIV in the last year. Getting a test is generally difficult. You have to usually go to a health facility, and it's expensive and time-consuming. So in this study, we set out to investigate whether a comprehensive package of home HIV self-testing and home initiation of treatment could improve the population's uptake of antiretroviral therapy.
In Malawi, you were able to carry out a cluster randomized trial to determine if self-testing and home initiation of care had an effect on overall ART use. This was a very large cohort, nearly 17,000 adults, in a highly endemic area where communication and transportation is limited. Can you tell us more about your study design and some of the challenges and highlights of doing such a large study in Malawi?
Sure. We did this trial in 14 urban neighborhoods in Blantyre, where nearly 1 in 5 adults are infected with HIV. Adults living in the neighborhood could access HIV self-testing through community volunteers and perform their own HIV test in the privacy of their own house. In all 14 neighborhoods, individuals who self-tested themselves positive could attend a local health facility and access treatment for HIV at the facility. In the 7 neighborhoods that we randomly allocated to the intervention arm of the study, adults who self-tested themselves positive could request that a nurse came to their house on a motorbike, assess them for eligibility for treatment, and started treatment at home. To our knowledge, this is the first study to examine the effects of a comprehensive home-based HIV testing, eligibility assessment, and treatment strategy. So we're excited about the results that show a highly significant increase in adults starting HIV treatment where optional home care was available. What about the challenges? Well, self-testing is a new model and a completely different way of doing HIV testing compared to what's been available before. Before the study, some people were skeptical that individuals living in poor communities with high levels of illiteracy would be able to perform and interpret their own HIV self-test. However, this study showed that self-testing was extremely popular, with 58% of the entire adult population testing for HIV in just 6 months, and our preliminary accuracy results have been excellent. Some people were also concerned about potential low rates of acceptance when HIV services were offered at home, possibly because of stigma and discrimination. Again, we showed that these concerns were unfounded. We ensured that we had strong community buy-in to the study. People seemed genuinely excited about this new, convenient approach to accessing HIV testing and treatment.
Very interesting. So after you did this community-based intervention, how did you analyze this data? And what was kind of the main outcomes of this home-based HIV treatment and testing?
So our primary outcome compared between the two groups, the proportion of all adult residents who initiated ART during the first 6 months of HIV self-testing availability. We analysed our data by adjusting for the effect of clustering by neighbourhood and showed that where optional home initiation of care was available, nearly three times as many adults started HIV treatment. That was a highly significant result. We also looked at retention on treatment after initiation and showed that after 6 months, there were no significant differences in retention and care between the two trial arms.
With such a large cohort, were there any confounders that you had to take into consideration?
So actually, both trial groups were well balanced in terms of socio-demographic characteristics. We didn't measure HIV prevalence or CD4 count profiles at the cluster level prior to the trial. However, we did adjust our analysis for reported household mortality at baseline, and the results still remained highly statistically significant after that adjustment.
And finally, kind of one of the big questions going forward, is this financially viable for other communities, and do you think you could roll this out in other endemic countries?
That's a great question. We did do a partial cost analysis, which showed that the cost of providing home initiations of care was approximately similar to providing 1 year of HIV treatment within a healthcare facility in Africa. So home initiation of care is clearly feasible and effective when self-testing is being offered at home and is probably reasonably affordable for most programs as well. However, it's important to recognise that a mixture of HIV testing and treatment strategies will be required to reach all members of the community. A one-size-fits-all approach is not going to work. We're advocating that other models should be developed and ideally compared to the home initiation self-testing model for effectiveness.
Thank you, Peter. This is very interesting work. If you'd like more information about this paper, you can find the article in the July 22nd edition of JAMA, and you can also visit Peter McPherson's staff profile on the LSTM website. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you both to Kayla and Peter for the interview. Now we move on to Chris Spencer, who is talking with Professor Bertie Squire.
Hi, I'm here today with Professor Bertie Squire, who's the Director of the Centre for Applied Health Research and Delivery here at LSTM. Good morning, Bertie.
Morning.
So, firstly, I was wondering, would you be able to tell us how exactly CAHRD or CARD got started?
Sure. In a sense, CARD has always been part of LSTM in that we've always undertaken what people would call technical assistance work or more public health field research. But what happened is in 2011, when the school was planning its next five-year strategic plan, it made a decision to really make a focus on that kind of work, because the prior five-year strategic plan had really invested a lot of time and thought into more discovery lab-based research. And so there was a wish in the next strategic direction to think more about field-based applied health operational type research.
So on the LSTM website, the CARD vision is stated as a healthy future for low and middle income populations. So how exactly will CARD achieve that aim?
So the vision is what we are working towards, and we think we'll do that through our mission, which is really much more focusing on transforming health systems. So we recognise that healthy futures are much broader than health systems, but we think our contribution is through health systems and the way health systems work and can be made more accessible, more effective for poorer populations. There is a recognition in general that there is something called the inverse care law, which is that in general, populations who are poorer, more vulnerable, actually have least access to health care. And I think one of the guiding principles of CARD is to try and work against that principle. In more specifically, we've got three outputs, if you like, which we think will help us towards that direction. The first is expanding the disciplinary resource that we have. So for example, traditionally in this field of public health, it tends to be clinical approaches or public health approaches, but we recognise that other disciplines are really important. So for example, health economics or operational modelling or mathematical modelling or human resource analysis, those kinds of things are really important, and we've traditionally not had that strength. So that's the first major point. The second is a wish to really conduct bigger pieces of applied health research, encompassing operational research, implementation research, and health systems research. And to do this, we're keen collaboratively to scope big questions, secure funding to answer those, and then publish the results. And then the third thing really is about building strong partnerships. And in particular, we're especially interested in engaging international partners, so ministries of health, NGOs, universities, particularly in partners from the Global South, developing countries.
So which LSTM departments does CARD work with, and in what capacity?
Yes, so it actually CARD works with all of the school's departments, including so vector biology, parasitology, clinical sciences, and international public health. When we first started discussing CARD, there was a tendency for people to think that it was something that would really only happen in international public health and clinical sciences. But it's clear that they're in the portfolio of even those two departments that are more focused on lab science. There's a substantial volume of applied health research. So we try to work across all of those departments. We also try to work in synergy with the cross-cutting themes, the other cross-cutting themes. So CARD is one cross-cutting theme in the school, and the others, evidence synthesis, capacity research, and the Centre for Health in the Eastern Mediterranean, are all also, or their work is very valuable to CARD. So we try to work across. And the way we do this is really about finding opportunities for cross-collaboration and interdisciplinary work. So we're primarily interested in looking for opportunities where we can maximise outputs through synergy, breaking down silos in which people work.
Okay, just to give us a bit of an insight into how CARD works, would you be able to give us a couple of examples of maybe initiatives or projects that are linked to CARD?
Sure. I'm going to be wicked, and I'm going to try and squeeze three examples in, not just a couple, if that's okay.
Lovely.
So the first is a piece of work that's ongoing in Western Kenya, hosted by the Kenyan Medical Research Institute and funded by the CDC. And it's really looking at a health economic analysis of different options for malaria control. So there's a big demographic database in Western Kenya, which has been built up in partnership between LSTM and KEMRI over many years. And they've found that they can, with some health economics expertise, actually look at some health at options of which of these different interventions are going to have biggest gain. And that the key people from LSTM on that are Faiko Takaile and Professor Louis Neeson, the Professor of Health Economics. So that's one malaria example. It's like a big program. Another big program example is the recent countdown bid. So this is the bid on controlling neglected tropical diseases, which was won primarily by the Department of Parasitology. So Mark Taylor and Russell Stothard, for example. But and neglected tropical diseases has traditionally been in the school very powerfully led by the lab sciences, but there's an increasing engagement in that countdown bid with qualitative research, understanding how communities engage with control, and also, again, there's a poverty analysis or health economic component within that. So those are kind of bigger programs. But I also wanted to give a more focused example of a single fellowship, because I wanted to make it clear that we welcome anybody who's interested in this kind of research, even if they want to work on a more individual basis. And the fellowship that I want to mention is actually a PhD student of mine, Danielle Cohen. She is doing a Wellcome Trust-funded clinical fellowship at the Malawi Liverpool Wellcome Research Programme based in Blantyre in Malawi. And she's interested in optimising health service response to recurrent TB cases. And she's actually conducting a pragmatic trial of whether it's okay for patients to have their daily injections for 2 months of their anti-TB treatment delivered by a family member who's been trained how to give injections, or whether to keep them in hospital for a whole 2 months. You can imagine being kept in hospital has both positive and negative consequences, and being at home has both positive and negative consequences. And so trying to answer that question is a really key health system type question to answer.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us, Bertie. It's been a pleasure. Just before we go, do you have any upcoming publications that you'd like to mention?
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I would like to mention a couple of publications. They happen to be from the area of lung health, and I don't want to give the impression that that's the only area where CARD works, but they happen to be coming out right now in September. One is in Lancet Respiratory Medicine, a whole supplement published by a consortium of people, but led by Professor Stephen Gordon here from LSTM and Kevin Mortimer. And it's really focused on the effects of indoor air pollution, pointing out how many people really suffer ill health consequences. And the second one that I'd like to mention is a piece coming out in Lancet Global Health, which is about using an integrated modelling approach to help ministries of health decide on which new TB diagnostic modalities to implement, at what level in the health system, and in what combination with existing diagnostic approaches.
Brilliant, thank you very much.
Thank you to both Chris and Bertie for the interview. For further information on either of this month's speakers, please look up their staff profiles on the LSTM website. Meanwhile, I hope you've enjoyed listening and will join us again for the October podcast, brought to you by the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine.